Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, human people. Welcome to the Mac Belfast. Please welcome a man who hasn't had an alcoholic drink for 999 days. It's Richard Herring. How lovely. I can see you all. Hello. Hello, Belfast. Oh, lovely to be back. Thank you very much for coming along to see the show. Welcome to Richard Herring's Little Stiff Toes podcast. That was the original name of Stiff Little Fingers. That's sorted the old from the young. Belfast band, punk band. And nice, isn't it? Little Stiff Toes are nicer than Stiff Little. I think there was something rude about Stiff Little Fingers. I never worked it out. But I was temping bowling at W5 today. Some pretty cool. And the cast of Game of Thrones was up on the next lane. They're still hanging around just in case. And Joffrey calls it Rahalastapas. I don't know if that's going to... Joffrey. Mind you, he can't even pronounce Jeffrey properly, so who knows? I had quite a funny thing happen to me on the way to the gig. It's been quite a journey to get here because I came from Hertfordshire, which is not near to Belfast. We went through airport security at Luton Airport, the finest airport. I'm sure you'll all agree that you can go to. I was buzzed through, you know, like it goes, there's a little traffic light system, your case comes down, there's a traffic light, waits for the traffic light, and then the traffic light goes yellow or red, it goes to a different thing. And so that my journey through was delayed. I've got this brilliant bag with loads of pockets, and I thought I'd emptied everything out, but I've got an iPad and some sun cream in the back, right? So then it went back, and then it came through again, and it went, when I was waiting, and it got to the bit, and it went the other way again, it went through again, the guy came through, and he looked through everything. He said, have you got a vape in there? It looks like there's a vape in there. I said, there's not a vape in there. He took loads of stuff out, put it all back in, went through a third time. It went back through. I had to go to the man again. And by this stage, you couldn't find what was wrong. He said, oh, God. And just in the dressing room, I found an extra pocket, the inside one of the other pockets, with a massive deodorant in it, which was useful. I just needed one as well. But what I'm saying to any terrorists out there, if you've hidden it quite well, just wait. By the third time, they just go through. Oh, we can't find it. You can go. There's something on the X-ray, but go, we can't find it. It's a little tip for the terrorists out there. Not that you guys need any help. So, I hate to see a city divided amongst itself. And whenever I travel, I do try to solve the world's problems. And I think you guys, I know you're in conflict, but why don't you just look for a thing that you all have in common? Just try and concentrate on that. For example, I think a lot of you here are Christians. So why don't you just focus on that? I think that could solve it. And I do have to thank the city of Belfast on behalf of you anyway, because it is my birthday on 12th of July, and I love the effort you put in for me. When I was a kid, when I was about 9 or 10, orange was my favourite colour, right? It was. I liked orange fruit pastels and stuff, but I prefer blue now, if I'm honest. And I love the fact you kind of hold on to the past, but maybe let some of the past, when, so many years have passed, maybe it's time to let things go. I don't know, that's all I would say. I used to like banging drums and wearing bowler hats and aggravating my neighbours, but I've changed. So, let's move with the times. So long ago, what you're doing that for, it's absolutely pathetic. William of Oranges. You pricks. Right, let's... And so are the Catholics, so it's fine. It's so fine. Jesus is even long ago, and no, that's not true either. So there we go, it's all good. We're all happy. Look, we're going to... How dare I come and try and comment on the situation when I have a fantastic guest for you who has done more to promote and explain what's going on in Northern Ireland than anyone else, I think. She's probably best known for being the writer of 2 episodes of Totally Frank. That is what we're going to be talking about exclusively tonight. I know there's a lot of Totally Frank fans in. Will you please welcome the incredible genius, Lisa McGee, ladies and gentlemen. Come here. Look, I'm gorgeous. Am I allowed to say that? I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. You look gorgeous. Am I allowed to say that anymore? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'm allowed to say
that. Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Good. I don't know. What can you do? I don't know what you can do. Lovely to see you, Lisa. Thank you very much for coming to my show.
Thanks for inviting me.
What's your memories of writing on Totally Frank?
I can't remember.
No, okay. Do you remember what it was?
It was my first TV credit.
Right.
I think maybe 2006, 2007, okay. Maybe. Yeah, it was about, I remember what it was about. It was about a band, girl band. And they had real songs that they tried to release, I think.
Is it a bit like Girls 5? Have you seen Girls 5 ever?
No.
Oh, it's a good show.
I bet I'd like it, yeah.
I think you would really, especially the first series is great. One fan in for Girls 5 ever. do watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. It's the best sitcom I've seen in the last five to 10 years. That's not true. Well, look, there's so much to talk to you about. What I want to start with, and you have talked about this in interviews before, the first dance at your wedding was to the theme tune from Murder, She Wrote.
Yes, that's right.
And I honed in on that. I'm very excited about this. You're a big fan of Jessica Fletcher.
Massive. Do you like Murder, She Wrote?
I don't. I think it's a bit shit. I like Diagnosis Murder, which is a classier show, I think. If you're going to go for that.
I was never under that. No. I know what it is, yeah, but it wasn't as good as Murder, She Wrote.
Did Angela Lansbury put her own children in Murder, She Wrote? No, she did not. So that's what Dick Van Dyke did.
Did I? Oh,
yeah, Barry Van Dyke plays the romantic lead.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And all the Van Dykes turn up in it at some point.
Oh, amazing.
And Chachi from Happy Days is in it before he went mental. It's got everything.
Yeah, it was too medically for me. I like it pure, like more just concentrate on the murders.
Yeah.
It's sort of showing off because they could do all the medical stuff.
Well. Yeah, they can cure people as well as solve mysteries. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. It is showing off.
Yeah.
pitch her to me, Jessica Fletcher. What do you like about?
I love that she seems to have a great life.
Yeah,
and she's like really, she's a really successful writer that doesn't seem to do any work. I like that. And she has a class house, and she it's really weird, but her husband sort of, they obviously had a very happy marriage, but then he passed away conveniently. And then she just like rocks around solving crime, and she has a wee bike. It just seems great. And
it's okay.
Do you know,
I saw the Haunting in Venice or whatever it's called, the latest Agatha Christie.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
But it's like what happens a lot. As a writer, and as writers, we shouldn't like this. It sort of implies that there's a writer character who's obviously like Agatha Christie in that one.
Okay.
But it sort of implies that writers can't think of any plots and so have to go and see things happening, which they'll then write down.
Yeah.
Which well, I think is writing's a bit tougher than that.
Totally. It's a bit of both, isn't it? Like you do steal stuff.
Yes, of course.
From real life.
You don't sort of set up murders and stuff. Though,
no. Oh well, God, no. Of course, yeah.
Do you?
No.
That would be a good.
It seems like a lot of effort.
Yeah. It is a lot of effort. Good. Well, I'm glad. I'm delighted that you. My first dance, my wedding to my current wife, was Girl from Mars because my wife's like an alien. I mean, she's attracted to me. I mean, well, she seems otherwise a quite normal person. But yeah, it was fun. That's important. That first dance. Have you got a video of you dancing to your first dance?
I can't remember. No. I don't know. Like, we weren't even going to do one, but then we thought that would be funny. It was the only reason we did it, I think.
Did you have it all choreographed?
Not really, but no. We started it with Titanic. Okay. And everybody was like, oh, for God's sake, you know, like the Celine Dion. But then it sort of went under the Murder, She Wrote theme tune.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like it. Look, I mean, it's glib to say I feel I know all about your teenage years.
Yeah.
for the very thing I've just said, that like then I'm suddenly saying, right, it's going to make stuff up, but I think that you've just written down everything you did for Derek.
Yeah.
is it a bit like you or is it not really like you? Those?
Yeah, I think like I would say loosely inspired by my teenage years, my family. My friends, but like anything, you take the bits that are going to work and stick them together and pull a character this way or that way or a situation. Like a lot of the very first ideas might be real, but then you push it so far and they're burning down a chip shop or whatever, do you know, because it needs to, like every episode needs to have a pickle, I call it, like what's the big pickle of each episode, and you push that as far as you can. So we done like, there was no killing nuns or anything, like, but we, you know, we might have been in detention type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that we'll talk about Derry Girls now. I wasn't going to talk about it straight away, but let's talk about it straight away and then talk about nothing else. I'm a massive fan of it. And I think the writing's so fantastic, but the characters are so amazing. And it would be it would sort of be impossible that all of those people were real and all together because it's so well put together. But what I love about it is there's not really any character in there that you don't like or that you don't care about or that you don't actually feel for, which I think is quite, you know, most people in a sitcom put in like a baddie.
Yeah, oh, that's lovely. Yeah. I think you don't want to have... the bit where everybody makes the cup of tea, you know, where go, oh, here, this bit, do you know, I never wanted that. So I really tried to make everyone have a thing that was funny in its own right. And I think that was just a good, it was just a good principle, really, because it just meant you got more jokes as well. If you really thought about everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone has in their mind is the lead character their sitcom. Do you know what I mean? Like Uncle Colin could have a different sitcom.
Yeah, he definitely could and should and must. But it is, you know, it is. I mean, the gang are fantastic and it's such a well balanced gang. But it is literally every person who comes in, you just feel affection for them. And you know, I know it wasn't your original intention to set it in the 90s, right? You were going to make
I was going to try and make it modern. Yeah, contemporary, yeah. But, that felt wrong for loads of reasons. I never attempted the contemporary version because by the time I'd gone to script, we'd discussed it and And I decided to give that a crack. And it just worked. It felt very natural.
Yeah.
And it actually felt like I had a... I've said this a lot. I avoided writing about the Troubles, and I was so bored. It was our whole lives, and it was everywhere. And it just, I thought, I remember saying to myself when I was a teenager, I'll never write about that. But the minute I did, I started, there was lots I had to say. You know, I found in lots of stuff that I felt was really stupid at the time, or, you know, funny, or,
yes. Yeah. Well, you know, but it's very much in the background, isn't it? And then we'll suddenly spring to the foreground. Yeah. But it's you forget about it. It's about family. It's about adolescence. It's about in this unusual situation. But I guess, you know, things like the bomb on the bridge and not being able to get across to get the tanning done.
Yeah, I mean...
It just makes it so human and real.
Yeah, and that feels like one of the least surreal jokes on it. Do you know what I mean? I remember people getting very... It became just a nuisance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, like, being in I've spoken about this before, too. Being in a queue for a shop with my mum when I was young, and there was a bomb scare, and she just had all her shit to do, and she was trying to get her stuff rung through before we got to... Yeah. Like, it was, you know, it just was that day-to-day.
Yeah. I mean, it's... As I said, I think it's... You know, for most people in England, I think certainly, maybe most of the mainland, it's, you know, they don't know about what was going on in Northern Ireland, I think. So I feel this is more educational than anything that's been put out in England, I think, for the English people. And it really brings home what it means. I'm sort of trying to imagine what it means. I mean, these people will be able to tell me, I suppose. But what it means, it must mean so much more for the people here.
Well, we get a lot of lovely feedback about it, and it's great because the one thing about people from here, and I love being from here and I love here, is they don't hold back if they don't like something. And, you know, you would really, they'd be pissed off.
Yeah.
So I know I was taking a risk writing it because, I don't want to, I didn't, it's a big responsibility, I guess, as well. And I don't think there'd really been a sitcom like that about that time before. I don't know, there's a lot of love for it, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. And it's, you know, it is that mix. I mean, it's finding, I think with comedy, when you can find like a serious situation, or even a deadly situation, even a tragic situation, and still find the laughs around it without laughing at, you know, it's not about, often people get upset about comedy thinking you're joking about something grave, but it really isn't that. It's finding the life and the humanity around this,
And it's the line you walk, isn't it? It's how you do that. And I think it's really about, and I learned this as I was writing, I think comedy, sitcoms, it's about a group of people you want to be with, go through things with, you know, and that you start, and it's why when people say it educates, Derrigate educated them about certain elements of Northern Irish history, it's because it can't be preachy. You remember something that's funny, you know, and I think before a lot of it had just been people shouting at each other on the TV, you know.
Yeah. I do. Well, I generally think that this is the kind... I'm sure some history teachers, and lazy ones, just put it on for the class.
But
they absolutely should because comedy is a great way to... You know, you remember things. You know, you remember all the things that happened in this and all the, you know, but equally it gives you that human element. And I think even if it wasn't set in Derry... The story of the characters and the fact it's about the stupidity of adolescence rather than about sexy 16-year-olds.
I really don't want to do that. I hate that. And I'm allergic to that. Like, but and also that another thing was that boys were always the one having the fun, and it's like there was always this sort of view like teenage boys are so crazy and funny, and the girls are always the one pulling them under line, or they never got any of the big gags on. And in my experience, I went to a convent school, very much like the one on the show, and they were the funniest people I ever knew, those all our girls, and they were just the rudest, and I hadn't really seen that either.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I wanted that I remember saying to my producers, like, our girls are going to be the ones that get to do all the all the jokes and all the bad things and get into trouble. So I think it was a lot of that. I think a lot of women responded to it because they saw their, no matter where they're from, they saw their friends.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And again, I know. And again, I think even the convent thing is that, you know, that's got in drama and, you know, it's got such a sort of bad rap. It's
yes.
always, it's always all bad nuns, yeah. you know, burying babies in the back garden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, I'm glad we can laugh about it now.
yeah.
But you know, but it is, you know, and Sister George Michael is, yeah. is an interesting character, but you definitely
side. There, of course, there is all that, and I'm not a fan of a lot of it. But there was this other side, the school I went to, where they really cared about your education. They really, it was, you know, working class gear, so we're trying to get them. They were trying to push them over that line and make them career women. And, you know, so I think they really, really give a shit about us as well. So
yeah.
I also had affection for I thought they were awful at the time. I was so scared of them. But, you know, I did have that affection for them looking back.
Yeah.
And you just go, God, they were just trying to get us, you know, to pass these exams to get into university, you know.
Yeah. And it's the second sitcom with a character called George Michael in it. Which is Arrested Development has that as well, which is another very good sitcom. So that is the my tip for writing a good sitcom. Stick that in. Look, it's had so many accolades. I'm not the mural is amazing, of course, that you've talked about. So there's out of all these incredible and sometimes partisan, shall we say, murals around. Sometimes they're quite political. I'd go as far as saying so to have the cast up
lovely,
on there
yeah,
is
yeah.
such. I mean, again, and it's such the spirit of the program, and
it's very cool. Like
yeah.
because where it is in Derry as well, it's bang in the centre of the town. So the idea that when it always takes me by surprise, and you're just walking through. And there's just these five Egypts, you know, just staring at you. And it's just lovely, yeah.
And you've been on The Simpsons?
Yes, that was the most exciting thing for me. I couldn't believe that, yeah.
So
yeah.
What's the... It's a sort of reference rather than...
Yeah, it's what they did. They called an ice cream parlour Derry Gears ice cream, but yeah. inside the uniforms are our school uniform as well.
Right.
And, I was then talking to the writers and they were saying they all watch it and they're all... So I was just blown away by that. I just could not believe that happened.
You're going to get a cameo in the future series?
Oh, I don't think so. But,
yeah. You did start off like wanting to be an actor though, right? It was when you went to drama
yeah,
school.
Yeah, and I didn't go to drama school.
No,
I wouldn't have got into drama school. I went to Queen's University and... I wanted to be an actor, I guess, in that way that was what you knew people, that was the thing you kind of knew about. Like, I was so bad, like famously bad at Queen's, how shit an actor I was. I always loved writing, though, and I was doing that at the same time. So that, thank God, there was something else I could do, because, yeah.
And so you came out of there and worked at the National Theatre almost instantaneously, it seems. Is that correct?
It feels like that now, but
yeah.
there were those couple of years when you leave university where you just think, oh my God, like, what am I doing with my life? But and that feels like when you're that young, that feels like centuries,
yeah.
you know. But yeah, look, when you see it written back on paper or whatever, you go, that feels quite lucky and quick. And yeah, and it was all those things as well. So I went over and did an attachment there. It's this brilliant, I don't know if they still do it, where they give you an office, give you a wage, and let you write, and you don't even have to write for them.
Right.
Amazing. Like,
yeah.
So for me, someone that definitely, there was no backup money. my parents were like, very much get a job. That it was just a brilliant way to be able to do a brilliant start for me. Yeah.
And was that where you saw? Were you thinking I want to move to TV, or were you thinking I want to be a very?
There was no plan. What happened was I was writing plays again because I did a theatre degree. That's what I knew. That's what you did. We'd had a wee theatre company, We were putting on plays in pubs and things like that. I got the attachment at the National. Around that time, I got an agent and I started getting TV work and started getting paid. And that was that. Because theatre doesn't pay, do you know? And no. If you're, you know, you have...
I know, well, when I've written plays, they really don't pay. They go in very... My last play lost £45,000. So that's... that was a pleasure. That was a pleasure to write that. And, you know, it is, you know, it doesn't feel it so much from your CV, but it is a struggle as a writer. And, you know, to go through these various jobs that you're writing on other people's ideas.
Yes.
And coming in and writing a couple of scripts on other people's ideas. Yeah. And then having your own ideas and trying to get those commissioned. I mean, we talked a little bit backstage about this, but I've always found it, you know, I've got like a foot in the door and people will see me and they'll often pay me to write something.
Yeah.
But then, it's a long time since something...
It's so hard. Yeah. And it's a whole... I think the writing on other people's stuff was very good for me, and also just wasn't a choice. I had to do it. But I did learn a lot from other writers, and it was just a good way to write in different genres, and because writing on a vampire thing or writing about, you know, the Tudors or whatever I did. Like, I can't even remember, but, you know, like a period thing or whatever. Yeah. I just think it's good to write in different voices and to try them out and all that as well. So it was, even though that, again, there was no plan, it really helped me.
Yeah. And so you wrote on Being Human, which you talked about there, which was involved ghosts.
I love that, yeah.
Imagine ghosts being a successful... sitcom that could never work. But I remember it. It was a you know, very interesting show, funny show.
It was great. It had that weird. There was another show at the time called Misfits, which had a similar tone, where it was just a very kind of British show, I guess. Like it was the vampires arguing over who made the tea last, kind of thing. So, I loved that show. I really and you could do little standalone episodes of it and things, and again, I had no interest in that kind of genre. It was the comedy that I loved about that show, and that's why I wanted to work on it.
Yeah. And so when did you start pitching like your own ideas?
I had a show about a kitchen, about a restaurant in Dublin. Place that, yeah. And that ran for 5 years. But that wasn't really my idea. That was someone else had written a film called Kitchen, and they wanted to do a TV show. But the TV show was completely different, so I kind of took over as the lead writer. That was set in Dublin for RTE. So that was my own, but I always did the other stuff alongside it. You know, I was doing Being Human as well.
Right.
Because I just think it's like you're saying, you have to line stuff up. Because stuff doesn't come back, and you know, and then
it's being a writer and being only a writer, I think, because as a comedian, and you know, I do bits and pieces on other sort of other shows, and sometimes acting, and sometimes you know, panel shows or whatever. So you know, I can do my own stand up shows if I need to go out to make some money. So it is, if you're just writing, it's that sort of lonely, thankless, sort of, especially when you're just creating stuff and it's not necessarily getting on. It's psychologically quite a difficult thing to get through. And you were young, right? You were still young when you were
doing. I was very, like, look, again, I thought I was, like, behind, you know, like, but I was young and I was very, very, very lucky. I feel a bit worried about the talent coming through now. There were a lot of chances.
Yeah,
I think, and it seems to be getting. I mean, you know, there's more opportunities in another sense. There's more TV.
Yeah.
Well, not at the minute with the strike and all that, but like there, you know, like there. But
well, it's sort of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because there is in that, you know, when I was first on TV, even and certainly when I was a kid watching stuff, a comedy show would come along every 6 months or a year.
Yes.
And it would be a big, you know, if it was your generation's thing, it would be a big deal.
Yeah.
Whereas now, and you would. It would seemingly people would get a decent shot at something. They'd get a couple of series at least.
And it's now, hard. It's hard to even get noticed now as a new show.
So you did a show called London Irish.
Yes.
Which again was only one series though, right?
One series. Yeah, not my choice, but no. one series. So with the same people that had went on to do Derry Gears with, and there's the lot of the reason I was able to do Derrick Yeir is because London Irish existed, so yeah. I'm very glad for it, you know. So that was cancelled after one.
It's not as disappointing as never getting something on, but it's almost worse, isn't it? Because it's sort of, you get there and then you've got it up and
pretty,
running.
It's pretty bad, because you put so much under it, and you've worked out that second series and everything, and you just think then of another mountain to climb, do you know? You try to go with I learned something from it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of being pissed off and annoyed, but yeah.
And did you feel when you came up with Derry Girls and Derry Girls before it was on, did you feel this is it? This is going to be the one?
No way. Absolutely no way. I felt that more about London Irish.
Really? Yeah.
I felt like Derry Girls was just... I mean, who was going to watch it? That was what I thought. I was like, are they mad? But I was just like, they're letting me do it. And they don't seem to be asking any questions, and it seems like it's happening. And then... we still don't know what happened, but it, you know, it worked.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes just it hits at the right time, and that's that.
Yeah. There definitely is an element of luck. I think, like, when you look at something like The Office, which I always keep coming back to, but it didn't really hit it the first time it was shown, and it was repeated because of one of those, you know, strikes.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I think John Peel championed it. People started championing it.
Oh, okay.
But, like, when you think, if that had just been one series and then disappeared, how different the world of sitcoms and entertainment would be. Not saying it'd be better. If Ricky Gervais wasn't successful, I'm not saying that world would be an amazing world.
I do feel there are shows that I've been a fan of that have kind of disappeared, and it's...
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Really good stuff, and you just go, but that's, it's not fair, is it? Yeah.
It's not fair. But then once you've got that, once you do have a hit behind you, do the doors open and everything become much easier?
It becomes a good bit easier. Yeah. Like, not as easy as I like it to be. Yeah, and I don't know how long it'll last, so I'm just running at it now because people seem to be, like, now I'm the Derry Girls person, so until that runs out, I'm just gonna write.
Yeah.
It definitely makes things a bit easier.
Yeah, that's nice to know. And reading interviews, it sounds like, I mean, is Derry Girls, there was sort of talk of a movie of Derry Girls, is that going to happen?
No. There was talk for a while, but then God knows, but probably in 10 years I could have changed my mind, but I just think when you end something really the way you want to end it, I don't want to be that person that goes back and everybody hates it,
you know? I do, it's a difficult decision because everyone obviously would love to see more, even though I absolutely, you know, it is that perfect show in that it wraps itself up and it's hard to imagine coming back. But you're still, you know, thinking about the characters and you're still kind of, you know, imagining their futures and what they would be now.
I do, less so now, but definitely when that year ended, stuff obviously still pops under your head, ideas, and you write it down, and then you go, we're done.
But you could bring it up to date and
yeah, I don't want to
have
that.
Them now. No. Yeah. Okay. All right.
No.
Can I write it? Except I want to call it London Derry Girls. It's just a little thing. Hope that's not controversial. I'll just ask Kat to get over that one. Wondering about putting that in, and then there it is.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'll ask you an emergency question.
Okay.
Yeah. You ready?
I'm nervous.
You should be nervous. It's not. This is just have to answer the question.
Okay.
Who is that? I've got, because I do little compilations of the emergency questions now every month, and forget ones that the ones that I've forgotten about. And the one that's coming out next, if you're listening at home, it probably is out already. Is what? Who is the most famous person you've ever been in a lift with that you didn't get into the lift with? Now, Aisling B needed a lot of explanation of that, of what that meant. But it just means...
Yeah, is that my question?
Yeah, that's the question.
Is it Ruth Jones from Gavin and Stacey?
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Yeah, but I didn't get on the lift. She went in the lift. Is that the answer? Yeah?
Well, you've got to be in the lift with her, can't you?
Oh, I thought you said that you didn't get on the lift.
No, you didn't. It's...
I've not...
The reason I stopped asking this question was because Aisling B, I think like the pandemic came and I forgot about it. And she was the last person I asked thing. Just you can't have walked into the lift like you were at a meeting with Ruth Jones and then we said, let's get a lift up to the next thing. You got in a lift and she either got in separately or you...
Who's famous that I've been in a lift with?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
That you didn't, get in the lift with.
No.
But not who's famous, not who's famous you've been in a lift with that you were having, that you got in the lift with. Who's famous?
Yes, go start again, sorry.
So... like the first time I was in, I got in a lift,
right?
And Jeremy Paxman was in the lift, and I touched my briefcase with one of my hands. So I didn't get into the lift with Jeremy Paxman; he was in there. Equally, if I'd been in the lift, and Jeremy Paxman had come in at the next floor, that would count. But if I'd said, "Hey, Jeremy, let's get in the lift together," that would not count.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, good. It's pretty simple. It's something about the island of Ireland that. Finds this a difficult...
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been in a lift with a famous person.
What happened with Ruth Jones?
She... we were both getting on a lift.
Yeah.
But we got in, it was the BBC separate lift. So all the lifts in the BBC.
Oh, so she got on a different lift.
We got it's a shite story.
But were you together? Were you together when you got in different lifts, or was she just waiting for the lifts downstairs? Because this will count if it's a different lift. As long as you weren't waiting downstairs, and then Ruth just says, just pretty funnily, so I'm going to get a different lift to you.
No. We were both waiting to go separate meetings.
Yeah.
And we got in different lifts.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to allow it.
Okay.
Not most people don't have lots of lifts to choose from, but they do at the BBC.
Okay.
That's where I saw Jeremy Paxman. I saw Ruth Jones on Charing Cross Road once.
Wow.
Yeah. Not a lift, though, is it? So the story doesn't care. Good, we'll get back. So, look, there's a few things you've been working on since Derry Girls, and what I'm excited to talk about is your new project, and I would like to know a little bit about this, as much as you can tell us, How to Get to Heaven from Belfast.
Yeah.
Wow, some fans already.
Yeah.
Or are they just liking the idea that they might get to heaven? How? So tell us, how can we do it? What is it about?
It's about a group of friends who are in their late 30s who go to the wake of an old friend they were at school with who they haven't seen in 20 years. And It's all very weird and mysterious, and a lot of weird stuff happens. And then they have to go on this adventure to solve the mystery. But it's kind of like a comedy thriller, different from Derry Gears. Yeah. Hour-long episodes. There's thriller beats, a lot of running around, but hopefully it's funny. I hope that's sold.
It's a bit like Murder, She Wrote, but set in Belfast. Yeah. That's good.
And there's three of them. More swearing. Yeah.
I think Murder, She Wrote would have been better with a bit of swearing, wouldn't it? It should have been called Murder, She Fucking Wrote. That would be great, wouldn't it? Murder, She Fucking Wrote.
Yeah.
Diagnosis Fucking Murder. No, I think it works for all of them. Calum Fucking Bow. When will we see it? Have you started filming? Has it been filmed?
No, we're still writing it. We were doing a writer's room all this week, actually. And we'll film it next year.
Yeah. And then out in 2025?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. I mean, it does take a long time, doesn't it?
It takes such a long time. Yeah. Writing them takes a long time. That's what people don't understand.
Yeah.
They're just like, should you just do it? And you're like, but it takes ages.
Yeah. Well, and to create, I mean, that's what, as a writer, I look at the stuff you've done and we talk about Derry Girls, and I'm such a big fan of Derry Girls, but just I look at that and go, how long did it take to get just that cast of, because there's so many people in it as well.
Yeah.
But to even get the core group together and work out what all their characteristics were going to be and then what their relationships to each other were going to be. And it's so beautifully put together. And I know there's a little bit, there's your granddad sort of,
there's some going. that I didn't have to work very hard for, like the grandfather. But yeah, there's a lot of sort of working stuff out with the gang, making sure a group of friends sometimes, they have to be believable as people that would hang around with each other, but also so in a comedy so distinct, they can't ever sound the same. So you're always kind of figuring that out as well.
Yeah.
And that was, we took a long time putting that cast together and all that. And it just worked. I remember we were very nervous about whether it was or wasn't working, because I think an ensemble, obviously it lives or dies by if you believe that central group.
Yeah.
And they were doing that. We were filming this scene where they've stolen a notice board from a chip shop, but for some reason they just think they're legends at this point, and they're just like walking down the street like rock stars, so they think, and they just look like such dicks. And me and the director were just like, that's them. Look at the state of them. This is like brilliant, you know. And you're laughing. Because I thought, when I'm laughing at them walking, this is good.
You know? And what's interesting, and it is again like The Office, is, if a show like this is a success, and then this was a problem, I think, for you in the third series, all the people become so successful as a result of being...
Yeah, it's really annoying.
The successful thing that you can't actually get them together in the same space to do. You have to have some of them on a wall and some of them standing at the bottom of the wall so they can be in the same scene together.
It's, very stressful. Yeah, I know exactly the scene you're talking about as well, yeah. Yeah, and it was just a nightmare. And then you threw COVID under that and it was great crack.
But it's, it's brilliant casting. It is so interesting, isn't it? I think I keep thinking about that with, especially if someone nearly gets a part.
Yeah.
I mean, I've met a couple of people who nearly got a part in The Office or nearly were such and such in The Office. And you think, well, if they'd got that part, would it have been as good? But would they have got on to be in Hollywood, or was it?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Because one thing I tried to do, if someone was brilliant, so we had an actress, Leo O'Rourke, who plays Jenny Joyce. She was auditioning for Claire. And she just wasn't really clear. She was brilliant. We kept bringing her back, but it just wasn't going. I don't know why. Jenny Joyce was going to be this one episode character, and so we just decided we're going to have to write that character because she's just so brilliant, and give her that character. And we did that a few times with people. They weren't maybe just exactly right for who they were auditioning for.
Yeah,
because it's so hard to get funny actors that you just go, let's try and hold on to them somehow.
Yeah. Well, I like that you put... I mean, I'm disappointed one comedian wasn't in it, but I like that you put comedians in, serious roles. Yeah, so Tommy Tin and Ardell as well. I mean, they both proved themselves as fantastic actors anyway, but they are, Tommy Tin is so good as that character.
He's brilliant. He's a brilliant actor, isn't he? And also there's a wee bit of me getting to do... Pop my heroes and stuff like Kevin.
Again, that's fine insulting.
But, you know, Ardle particularly. Yeah.
I can do the accent.
Go.
Oh, I'm from Northern Ireland. See, I could have done it. No, you girls.
That's brilliant.
Stop doing that. See, I could have been in it. Thank you. Good. Let me. I'm gonna go to. I want to show the audience these wonderful books that are available in the foyer after the show. I'm gonna pick an early emergency question for you. Just give you a rest from the Dairy Girls.
Okay.
Imagine that. Have you ever seen a ghost, Lisa McGee?
I've heard a ghost.
You've heard one. What was it doing?
It told me to become a nun.
It is. That's not. That's the Holy Ghost. That's the big. That's the best ghost there is.
Yeah.
Well, what was the circumstances and why aren't you a nun if a ghost has told you to be one?
Yeah, okay. So I was staying in my friend's apartment in Belfast and I was quite tired. I don't know if I was hungover, but I'm going to say I wasn't hungover, right? But I heard this. I was sleeping and I heard this.
It's, I was sleeping. So many of these stories.
No, but like...
I was asleep and then I saw...
But there was a nun. I was very aware there was the presence of a nun in a room and she said to me, Lisa, you need to be a nun. Like, this is just what your life...
Yeah.
At that time, I was working as a stage manager and I wasn't very good at it. So I was like, maybe this is an option. But then I went around that day telling all my friends, I have to be a fucking nun now. Like, this is... desperate and also remember saying to the nun spirit, but I want to be a writer, and she was like, you can still write, loads of nuns write, and I was like, okay, but by
they write, but no one fucking reads anything they put.
I've just bought a book by a nun. So then I told everyone, they were like, Lisa, you're not going to be a nun, like, grow up. So I sort of got myself out of it some by kind of. But then...
Did the ghost come back?
No,
I told you to be a nun.
The apartment used to be a convent.
Wow.
The building.
Yeah, if that story hadn't happened in Ireland, that would be amazing.
I thought that was a really good twist.
That's but like if a ghost tells you to be a nun and then you're not a nun. What's the ghost telling you to be a nun for? She's a nun and she's dead.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's a trap to me. It's like, I was a nun. It killed me. And now I'm going to get you into the nun business.
Yeah.
Also, if I was a nun, I would creep around people's houses, the houses of young women, if I was a nun. And whisper, you've got to become a nun because as a ghost.
Yeah.
And pretend to be a ghost like Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get new nuns, isn't it? It's different. Yeah. Nuns, they can't reproduce. That's the whole point, can't they? They can't. So you have to get
nun,
new people in, huh?
If you're a dead nun, you don't give a shit about.
She wasn't dead. She was alive. She was an alive nun pretending to be a dead nun to get new nuns in.
That seems more far fetched than being an actual ghost.
You don't know what nuns are capable of. They've got a lot of time to themselves. Any nuns in? You admit? Come on, you know, there's something suspicious, isn't it? So it's, when you're that good, it's a bit suspicious. That's what I would say. I once caught a falling nun.
You once what?
I once caught a falling nun. A nun was falling down the stairs. It was in Habitat in Hammersmith when they had that. She fell down the stairs and I just got underneath her. I didn't fully
catch her.
But I dove down and so her head landed on my...
When we die, if it is the Catholics that are up there, that's massive brownie point.
Yeah, I think so. I'm hoping. I don't know if it balances everything else that I've done. But let's hope so. She wasn't very grateful. Could have got me a gift voucher for Habitat in return. Very good. Look, I'm going to ask you another emergency question because that was fantastic. I'm going to go... I've got Christmas book. I've got the original book. I've got all sorts. I'm going to ask you a Would You Rather in a minute as well. This is a slight bastardization, actually, before I do this one. If you had a finger that could travel through time,
finger that could travel.
Yeah,
through.
What would you, where would you go? Where would you take your finger and what would you do with it?
Wait, hold on. Is it just my finger?
Yeah, that's why I said a finger that can travel through time. Otherwise, I'd have said if you could travel
but
through
can
time.
Can I see what the finger's doing?
Yeah, you can look through. So, like, there'll be a hole about that big. You can look through to see, just so you can check what's going on.
Oh.
You could probably, if you could probably sniff to see if there was a smell.
Oh.
Is there any way you'd like your finger to be in history or the future?
No, it would definitely be history.
Yeah.
It might be like to find out who Jack the Ripper was or something. Okay. Or like the Egyptians.
I mean...
I don't know what.
Or just, the Egyptians. Just,
yeah.
Jack the Ripper or the Egyptians.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a broad...
One of the two. Yeah.
What would you do to Cleopatra? Who, which Egyptian, which era of the ancient Egypt are you interested in?
The fella, the Tutankhamun. Yeah,
not that. I would say not that interested, Lisa. If you say the fella, old Tutan, what's it?
Yeah.
I think any, you know, we went around the world and asked what's the name of the, what Egypt, ancient
yeah,
Egyptians can
I
you
just
name?
Lost
I think people would say Tutankhamun. Yeah. They'd be the first thing to say, not that fella, Tutan, what's his face?
I know, I did know. I lost confidence as the start of his name.
Tutankhamun. What would you do to Tutankhamun?
I'd just like to see what was going on and what he was up to. And
but you've got a chance to alter things very slightly.
I might move some stuff around.
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. Okay.
You haven't really thought it through. No. Right, this might go out... I think this will go out next year, actually, just like way after Christmas, but I'm going to ask you a Christmas emergency question.
Okay.
In this case, it's just going to be whatever... Oh, look, this is an interesting question. Academic and science writer Ben Goldacre, are you aware of the work of Ben Goldacre?
Yes, absolutely.
Keeps Christmas cake in his freezer so he can enjoy it all year round.
Right.
That's a fact.
Okay.
I've been to his flat. Is there any Christmas food that you enjoy consuming at the wrong time of year? It's an unlikely answer. I've never asked anyone that question.
Snowballs, you know them snowball cakes?
Yeah.
With, like, full-fat Coke.
Right.
If you take a bite and then drink the Coke, it's like a whole experience.
Right, okay. And you can do that any time. Doesn't it feel weird if you do that in July?
I've never, ever tried it.
Okay.
I might now, though.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right. We'll get back, to your career. And what we've got for you. So you've written with your husband.
Yes.
The murder you wrote, she wrote to Dancy.
Yes.
How was that? Because my wife is a writer and a better writer than I am, I think. She sometimes says, should we write something together? And I kind of say, I think we will be divorced quite quickly if we do that. How did you find writing with your partner?
Do you know, it's like it was good because I think that thing you're saying, it's not just you on your... At that stage, I'd written Derrygate on my own. So to have someone kind of... We always agreed on what we were doing with that show as well. So to have someone on your corner, you were at least two people arguing with other people then, you know, it was good and it was good to get a crack at it. Why we decided to write the show we wrote together was because we really liked those, you know, Dial M for Murder, those old sort of thrillers, and we just wanted to do something that, like, over four parts that people could just sit down and have their dinner with and watch a good old murder show kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, it was really nice. I know what you're saying, though. It did get to the point where it was all we talked about.
Yes.
And I had just had our second son.
Yeah.
And I was in the hospital after a section complaining about a costume I didn't like.
Okay.
So it can get a bit where you go, maybe we should step back from this and, you know.
And your husband's an Englishman, I take it from having spoken to him, I know, because I've looked at this, and of a different, slightly different, you're both Christians, but one of you's got... I think it's Christianity about just forgiving people, it doesn't matter if they don't agree with you totally... You turn the other cheek. I don't know. I don't want to come to Belfast and tell you what to do. He's a Protestant and you're a Catholic.
Yes.
That's a great story, is it? Is that a
well? He's. I mean, he doesn't really believe in anything.
Okay,
but his family are like. So at our wedding, we had to have two lines for communion.
Yes.
Like it was, and it got quite competitive because. The Catholic Irish line wanted to be the bigger line.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stuff like that, I guess.
Did they win, though? Did the Irish
win? I can't even remember.
I bet they did. And you've moved back to Northern Ireland after living in London.
Yes,
for,
we're here now, yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, the industry in Belfast is insane.
It's
like
amazing, yeah.
I mean, like, in all seriousness, Derry Girls has been like, it must have been an amazing thing for writers in Northern Ireland to see you have that success and think this is possible, right? So that's...
I think it's, there's a lot more confidence that people will, like, be able to understand our accents and our sense of humour and, like, want to hear our stories. I hope we're going to see a lot more comedy from here.
Was that part of the reason you wanted to move back, or was it just...
It was like a number of things. I think the kids was a big thing. You know, a lot of people move home, don't they, when they have children. But I think it got to the point where we were just filming everything in Belfast, and it was like, this is nuts. You moved to London because, you know, that's where the industry was, and then we're flying back all the time, and it just made sense.
Yeah. And, you know, we can Zoom, can't we, if you need to talk to somebody in London. And also, you're a big deal. Let them fucking come to you. Let those London pricks come to you on an easy jet. On a delayed easy jet for 4 hours. the whole industry, the Game of Thrones that seems to never end.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brilliant time for... And you're in the EU and the UK at the same time. It's a brilliant time to... It's worked out pretty well, hasn't it? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, like, a lot of... There's a lot of... And for a while, there's been a lot of stuff being made here. What I'm excited about is there's stuff now about here being made here.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what...
Wasn't Game of Thrones about Northern Ireland? I misunderstood. The White Walkers, I thought that was... Well, that was part of it. Well, that was something. And, yeah, it's... I was going to ask you the same question I just asked you then. I won't do that. this is mainly for me because I'm a terrible interviewer who's been tired. I'm going to ask you another emergency question and then we'll get back. Time has flown by.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, it really has. I haven't got time to dick around with emergency questions. I've got to ask, there's some I've got to ask to make the people... I don't want to come all the way to Belfast and not get a cheer for asking a disparate question. Would you rather have a hand made out of ham? Yeah. That's all you're wasting your time writing sitcoms.
Yeah, I know.
Just write a question and you get a cheer everywhere around the...
Okay.
Hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream. So... You can eat your hand, it'll grow back.
Oh my God, sun cream.
Wait till you've heard all the stuff.
Okay, sorry.
Everyone chooses the sun cream, yes.
Okay.
Sun cream squirts, so you can have a nozzle there, but it's only enough for personal use. You can give it to other people, but you can't. It's not like a factory.
Can you fill up bottles with it?
Well, you can, but it will only be enough to how much you would use in a year.
Yeah,
get three bottles or something. I don't know how much you use. I had some in my bag and it got taken away by customs over there. Fucking slathered themselves in my sun cream.
I definitely do the sun cream thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Does everyone say that?
Yeah, of course. The hand made out of ham's horrible. It's ridiculous. It's a stupid question.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely pointless question. Well, look, you know, I really understand why you wouldn't want to do more Derry Girls. I completely understand. I'm really excited to see the new show. Is there other stuff? Are you writing? Because now you must be more financially secure than you were when you first went over to London.
Oh God,
so you
you
can go back to writing plays. And is that something that appeals to you?
It does. I have I have had an idea for a play for ages. Again, it's just motivate people. You have TV. You have people around you who just shout at you until you do the thing.
Yeah.
And theatre, it seems more like being a novelist or something.
Yeah.
And so I'll go, I'm going to work on my play, but then I just sit because it's like I've no real pressure. You're so, you know, there's a lot of motivation with TV because we have a wee team that made Derry Girls, that's making the new show. We want to keep working together, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I completely get that, and I'm the same. I want to write a novel, but it's never fucking going to happen. And it's not going to happen. I mean, like, if someone really said we're going to pay you and you have to do it by now, I might manage to do it.
Yeah, but
it is that. When I wrote Time, Gentlemen, Please, half, and I really did it nearly all on my own, and we did 22 episodes of the first series, but they gave us 13 of those episodes in the middle of the run. So I had to write one.
Oh my god!
I had to write an episode a week on my own.
Oh my god!
You get it done though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I could do it now. I was young, but I did it, and they weren't noticeably any better or worse than the other ones.
It's a thing. Like my memory. I can't remember if we were saying this back there or here now. Yeah. But the works. Once you've set up that pilot, that first episode, there's 100. Times more work was under that than they are. So you can kind of run at it then a bit.
And you have the fun. As you say, if you find an actor or a character that you love, you can turn it halfway through that series, Rebecca Front sort of said, oh, I'm pregnant. I'm going to, you know, by the time we finish the series, I'm going, because it was such a long series, I'm going to be, you know, noticeably pregnant.
Yeah.
So that became like a story arc throughout the whole series where she got pregnant. We didn't know who'd impregnated and she didn't know who'd impregnated her. So it was, you know, it's really interesting to use that. And I think, you know, you do... I mean, I don't think many people could do what I did.
No.
I generally don't. I don't think there are many people who could allow themselves to do it so fast. And, you know, it was really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of destroyed me for a bit. And I don't think many people would attempt it. But I think most right. If someone said to you, you have to write an episode of Derry Girls in the next week because
well, sometimes you have to for some other reason.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I would have really freaked out if it had been in that, but you would have had to do it. But like sometimes you can't film it for other reasons or something happens with an actor and you just have to get very creative and be very open to change in TV writing, I think. You know, it's just, it's never the final thing. And even when it goes out in TV, I'll see something I wished had changed. Do you know, or a better version of the thing? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is... It's good that you have to stop, though, right? It's good that it's good because
there has to be a point that it stops. I think I always say there's like a brilliant, there's like the perfect time with an idea, and it's stuff can be developed for too long, or it can start too quickly. Do you know? But there is a sort of middle ground. But if you don't start when you need to start, you'll lose the whole energy of the idea, I think, as well.
Yeah. And is it, I mean, if you've got a big, big success, I can only imagine what it's like. Is it a pressure? Does it put too much pressure on the next thing, or are you able to go, okay, I'm just going to do my best with the next thing and not think about that? Or are you thinking, what if this is not as good as the last one?
I try not to think about it because there's no way it's going to be like Derry Girls. It was just a weird thing. And it's, the fact that Derry Girls was even successful was strange. Like, I think you just have to... I'm excited by the new challenge of this show and I'm trying to, challenge myself as a writer and think about the audience rather than me and my ego and if I'm good or not, you know. Think about just telling a story that I'd want to watch.
Yeah.
And, that's all you can do. Obviously... when it goes out and the next day and the reviews, you know, you're going to be shitting yourself, but that's just natural as well. Yeah. You'd be crippled by it if you kept thinking about...
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm sure it's lovely, but it's also like it's a bit annoying, right? If people, like I have throughout this interview, keep going on about...
Oh, God, it's not annoying at all. I waited a long time for people to care.
Yeah.
So I'm just still delighted. Yeah.
I think what's interesting as well with you, it isn't, you know, sometimes it's the first thing. I can't.
No.
You know, it's the first thing anyone's done and it's massive.
Yeah, I'm so glad it wasn't,
you know, and I'm very glad I've had 35 years to wait till my successful thing. Well, it's going to happen really soon. And then I'll really appreciate, when it comes, I'll really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it is, I think that's...
I think if my first thing had been successful, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just have gone mad and thought it was brilliant and been, you know, I'm so glad that I can, that it came at the right time for me. Like, you know, I just...
Well, you seem, I mean, I hang around with a lot of comedians, so everyone seems well-balanced, but you seem... You seem like a very together and happy. But and are you content? Are you happy in your life? Do you feel like?
I am. I feel very lucky. You know, I am. I really, really love what I do as well, and it's just incredible to have a job that you're still excited about and don't know. Like, I still don't know. I don't know anything about it. You know, it's that thing of the more you know, the less you know. Do you know? It's just like there's so much still to learn, and there's so much good writing at the minute that it's you're always trying to push yourself.
Well, look, Lisa, it's such an absolute pleasure to meet you. I say I am a huge fan, and it's great to see you in Belfast, in Northern Ireland, amongst your people, who I know love you. Ladies and gentlemen, the fantastic Lisa McGee. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Lisa McGee. Thank you to Scant Regard for providing us with this music. I'm indebted to my friend Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, not that one, and George Lingford, not that one, and Beck Cliff, that one. She's the only one. I was going to say something else. Oh, and everyone here at the Mac in Belfast, of course, thank you for having us, and to EasyJet for making our trip here so easy, and the man at security making me go around three times. Thanks for that. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.